With Forbidden Door less than 3 weeks away, AEW had Dynamite tonight. It is still looking very much like any other AEW pay-per-view. I'm waiting for the actual Forbidden Door portion to come into the show. The card is starting to fill out a little bit. We know that the Unified Championship will be on the line. Kazuchika Okada, who is not on the show tonight, is going to be defending his title against Swerve Strickland. We know the Hurt Syndicate will put their AEW tag team titles on the line against the winners of this tournament that's been going on, which will be an AEW team. We know Timeless Toni Storm is putting her championship on the line against Athena. And we know that the TBS championship will be defended in a four-way match. At least in that match, they will have representatives from CMLL and from Stardom. And then outside of a possible Hiroshi Tanahashi match, that's about all we know at this point. So not a whole lot of Forbidden Door influence. I think I mentioned last week, the G1 Climax is still ongoing, and it will not end until the week before the pay-per-view. So it is entirely possible, if not probable, that we will not see any New Japan talent on the show until then, like the week before the show. Because normally Forbidden Door happens a little bit earlier. This year, because the schedule changed a little bit, we had All in July, and now we have Forbidden Door in August. So it's a little bit weird. But in the main event tonight, we had MJF and Mark Briscoe one-on-one. And there were no stipulations attached, no conditions attached to this match. But it seemed like the winner would probably end up challenging Hangman for the World Championship. And MJF beat Mark Briscoe tonight. This is the fourth week in a row that Mark Briscoe has been a part of the Dynamite main event. And it was not without controversy. Him getting his foot on the bottom rope, the idiot referee, of course, not seeing it, and MJF is the winner. Hangman came out. We had a big brawl to close out the show, but we are really no closer to a resolution now to the question of who challenges him next for the championship, because there's still time left between now and the pay-per-view for them to run this match back, maybe not next week, but maybe in 2 weeks. So are we looking at a situation where we're getting one more match between MJF and Mark Briscoe, or are we looking at a situation where we may get a triple threat match for the AEW World title at Forbidden Door? So that's the question coming out of this show. The highlight of the show tonight, easily, I mean, it's not even close, was the Tag Team Eliminator semifinal match. I got to tell you, the Young Bucks have, in many ways, the last few weeks, ever since they lost their EVP titles, have been the highlight of this show. I don't know what that says about everybody else, but the whole shtick with them coming out and getting the jobber entrance and everybody making fun of them, I've been amused by. And then their match tonight against Brody King and Bandido stole the show. They went out there and had a great match with Brodito, moving on to the finals of the tournament to wrestle FTR, not the Young Bucks, which was the right outcome. But also not just the right outcome, because Brodito just should have won the match and beaten the Young Bucks, but now it sets up a final that honestly could go either way as far as who goes on to challenge Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin at Forbidden Door. So at least in that match, I feel like there is a little bit of unpredictability as far as who walks out with the W in that match. But I thought that tag team match tonight was easily the best thing on the entire show. Yeah, I mentioned the Hurt Syndicate. I'll touch upon this a little bit later. There was some drama involving the Hurt Syndicate, a news report from Fightful that came out yesterday regarding MVP. I'm sure some of you at least have seen it and know what I'm talking about. There's been a little bit of an update. We'll get into that a little bit later on. This show, it was a solid show. There were some things on the show that I liked. It did forward some things along in terms of the key stories that they are trying to tell at the moment, including Jon Moxley and Darby Allin, some other stuff with the women, which we'll get into. I can't tell you that this was a show where any one thing stood out in a spectacular way as far as some big angle development. The big thing that stood out was the tag team tournament match. And that was honestly it. But the rest of the stuff on the show, it was fine. Just none of it really stood out. Not like that tag team match did. This is your AEW Dynamite review. It is Wednesday. It is August 6th, 2025. I am the Solid Monster. Thank you yet again for hanging out with me. It's been a very busy week. Going back to the weekend with two SummerSlam shows, Raw Monday night, and now the Dynamite post show, and a podcast in between, by the way, episode 923. Thank you for all the feedback to that. Hit that subscribe button, hit that like button, and if you would like to, hit the super chat button, like Joseph Stewart just did. I appreciate the support. Any messages that come in, I will be reading all of them, so get them on in. We're looking for a minimum 400 likes on the stream tonight. If we hit that goal, we will do Be the Booker later. But we got to hit that threshold. So hit that thumbs up as well. Check back on that periodically here as we go along. Let's get into this show. Excalibur was hyping up the main event tonight between MJF and Mark Briscoe. And then he introduced a promo from MJF, who was in the back and he was holding his world title contract that he won in the Casino Gauntlet back at All In, and he has a championship now. Has nothing to do with the contract. In fact, it has nothing to do at all with AEW, but he is now a champion in CMLL. He's got the CMLL light, actually it's the CMLL World Light Heavyweight Championship is the title he won. He said that since Hangman refused to give him a world title match, one of his friends is going to pay. Mark Briscoe is looking in the eyes of the devil, and he has no problem sending him back to hell or worse, to Dumpster, Delaware, where he'll be stuck being a chicken farmer and a blue-collar bitch, is what he said. He's not championship material. He's not a real man. He's white trash that got lucky, which is why the fans cheer for Briscoe. They pity him. It says, tonight, Briscoe's luck will run out. So yeah, if you didn't see it, MJF beat Averno last Friday to win what he is now calling the CMLL World title. That's what MJF is calling it. And I assume that the plan is for him to drop that championship to Mystico. CMLL has their anniversary show coming up in mid-September. I think it's like their 92nd anniversary this year. Oldest wrestling promotion in the world, and big anniversary show coming up. Tony Khan got to do the first match between them on his show, even though it was at Arena Mexico. He got to do the first match between them on Dynamite, right on that Grand Slam show, I believe is where the match took place. I would have to think that CMLL would like to have the second match, and that is where Mystico can take that championship away from him. So that would be my guess as far as what the end goal is of him having that title. But, you know, I mentioned this on the podcast, and I just found this interesting because we have so many championships in wrestling right now, just in this company alone, but even in WWE, there's so many championships, and there's always so many, you know, titles changing hands at any given moment that it's pretty impressive the fact that this championship, MJF is only the 21st champion to hold that title. That title was established way back in 1991. So to have 20 champions since 1991 is pretty impressive. So that struck me because I was curious. I'm like, I wonder how far does the lineage go, you know, for this belt? And I'm like, okay, 91. So you had, you know, Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior wrestling the Triangle of Terror. And you had Bret Hart getting his first real singles push. And all of these things that were going on in wrestling, right? The Boss Man sending the Mountie to jail. Ric Flair had just left, you know, the NWA or WCW. That's when the title was established, and he's only the 21st champion. So I have a feeling that number 22 is coming very soon, though. So the opening match tonight was Jon Moxley against MVP's favorite wrestler, Speedball Mike Bailey. So Bailey exploded with some offense. Moxley was very preoccupied here. And he looked like he was preoccupied scanning the crowd looking for one Darby Allin, not knowing where or if he might pop up. So Bailey floated over in the corner. He went for a moonsault. Moxley poked him in the eye. Wheeler Yuta took the referee. That allowed Marina Shafir to sweep out Bailey's leg. Shafir got in the face of Kevin Knight. Of course, that's Mike Bailey's tag team partner. He was on the outside. Moxley slapped him in the face. This brief distraction here allowed Bayley to hit his triangle moonsault. He draped Moxley over the barricade and hit a standing moonsault double knees. That took us into the commercial break. Moxley regained control during the break. Bayley battled back with some kicks and a missile drop kick that landed off the second rope. Moxley tried a rear naked choke. Bayley spun out with an arm breaker, went up top for a shooting star press for two. Quickly, though, transitioned into a cross arm breaker and then a triangle choke. Moxley, he powered up. Bayley got a hurricanrana back to the arm breaker, and both men traded near falls until Bayley popped up into another moonsault double knees. So Knight and Shafir, they're getting into it again now on the outside. They start arguing. That allows Wheeler Yuta to trip up Bayley while the referee was distracted. All of a sudden, we see Darby Allin. And Darby Allin appears in the crowd behind Wheeler Yuta. He places a rag over his face. I guess he's chloroforming him or whatever it is. And he drags him out of the building. He kidnaps him. So Moxley was distracted. Bayley got a quick roll up for two. Bayley went back to the arm breaker. Moxley spun out. He sank in a choke. And then he spiked Bayley with a Death Rider for the win. After the match, Moxley and Shafir, they scramble through the crowd. Presumably go save Wheeler Yuta. Either that or they were just going to look for Darby Allin and didn't give a fuck about Wheeler Yuta. So that was the opening match. And, you know, it was fine. It was what it was. It was solid enough. That the real focus here wasn't even so much Moxley against Speedball. It was the shenanigans with Darby Allin. But outside later, and we're skipping ahead a couple of segments here, but the continuation of this came a little bit later. Moxley and Shafir, they're out in the parking lot now. And they find Wheeler Yuta. We don't know that it's him right away, but there is clearly a body lying on the ground outside of the parking lot in a body bag. And so they go over and Darby's about to run him over with his truck. Okay, attempted murder here on Dynamite. Death Riders pull Yuta out of the way just in time. Darby pulls up, he stops his truck, he looks out the window at Moxley, and then he just floors it. And he drives away. And that's how this came to an end. Then they unzipped the body bag. Wheeler Yuta was inside, and stuck to his forehead is a sign that simply says, Forbidden Door. Again, great. We're going to get Moxley and Darby at Forbidden Door. I ask you, what is the attraction of that being on the Forbidden Door card? When the majority of the matches so far are strictly AEW matches. It's just very weird. The timing of this show is very weird. Now, they've already moved, I think, something like 15,000 tickets for the show. They obviously have a lot of fans over in London. They didn't get a stadium show this year. They'll go back to Wembley next year. So they're doing it at the O2. So it's going to be a packed building. It's going to be a hot crowd. Forbidden Door is still a hot ticket for this company. I'm just waiting for the actual Forbidden Door portion of the show to kick in to see what those matches are going to look like and how many of those matches there will be relative to the AEW-only matches, of which this is one. Now, this match has not been made official yet, but obviously it will be very soon. Yeah, Mike says AEW bought all the New Japan top talent. Basically. They basically did, yeah. They basically signed them away. And we'll see. I mean, we haven't heard anything new on the Will Ospreay front, him and his two herniated discs. He did say he was going to try to make it back in time for Forbidden Door. I mean, you know what? If his goal is to be back and to be cleared in time to work a match on the Forbidden Door show, in all honesty, the safest match probably for him would be Tanahashi. Tanahashi is wrestling his last ever UK match on that show. I cannot think of a safer, better opponent for him if he's, you know, still dealing with that injury than Hiroshi Tanahashi. So, I mean, that may be the way to go, honestly. And it'll be, yeah, the best opponent for Tanahashi, you know, to give him the best match possible. So Renee Paquette, she was all over this show tonight. She was backstage with Timeless Toni Storm and Mrs. Will Ospreay, Alex Windsor, to talk about both the Fatal 4-Way tonight for the TBS championship spot. There's multiple spots, but there's one spot for an AEW challenger. And that match was coming up later in the show. Windsor was a part of that match, but also to talk about the AEW Women's World title match at Forbidden Door, because Toni Storm is defending against Athena. Storm said that tonight is a menagerie of bruising, brawling bitches. Something that she used to dream of. If there's anything that she knows about this non-sexual friendship with Windsor, you can beat us down, but you cannot beat us off. All right, then. I suppose, like, that is kind of true. That would be difficult to do, I would imagine. We had a TBS Championship 4-Way qualifier, speaking of which, with Alex Windsor, Queen Aminata, Sky Blue, and Billy Starks, who was out there with Athena. Toni Storm made her entrance. She was going to be in Alex Windsor's corner. Sky Blue found herself being ping-ponged at the beginning of this match in between Aminata and Windsor. So after a break, Aminata and Blue, they were slugging it out. And Sky Blue threw a kick, and then she tried a code Blue. Windsor, though, cut it off with a Blue Thunderbomb. Starks broke up the cover with a facebuster, only to then run into a pop-up powerbomb by Alex Windsor. So the sharpshooter was applied on Billy Starks. Aminata booted Windsor for the break. Blue and Billy Starks cut them both off and traded kicks on one another until Windsor and Aminata dropped both with stereo German suplexes and headbutts before they threw one at each other. That gave us a reset here in this match. So Windsor was looking for a superplex. Sky Blue, though, countered into an avalanche code Blue. Aminata broke up the count with a reverse DDT. Billy, though, flew in with a swanton. Flattened poor Sky Blue here in the process. Aminata popped up, hit a rolling suplex for two of her own. And then, outside the ring, there was a very embarrassing spot. And what happened is Sky Blue tried to do a code Blue onto a chair. It was a chair that was set up outside. And she was going to do a code Blue to Aminata onto the chair. Aminata just stood there hunched over. Like, as Sky Blue was trying to maneuver her body to do this move, it really just felt like she couldn't get in the right position. But Aminata is hunched over. And I guess Sky Blue, because maybe she was supposed to counter out of it, Sky Blue thought that that's what she had done. But really, this was on Sky Blue here. This just looked really bad. And Sky Blue ended up throwing herself forward into the chair face first. Literally just threw herself into the chair. And there was like this delay of a second or two that she had, and she went and did it anyway. And Aminata is still just hunched over there. Like, it was not good. It just looked terrible. So Aminata ended up delivering a reverse DDT onto the chair after that, try to salvage the spot. I mean, look, shit happens, but it was bad. I don't know. I mean, maybe John Cena threw her into the chair. Someone did. There was some spiritual being, perhaps, that launched her face first into the chair. Back in the ring, Windsor hit a discus lariat on Billy as Athena went to go get into the ring. Storm, though, pulled her down to the floor. Starks wanted a brainbuster. Windsor countered into a Toni Storm big package for the flash pin to get the win. Now, after the match, we hear the music of one Mercedes Moné, who is now Mercedes 8 Belts. She won another one recently. She visited a tiny village in Poland, and they had an independent wrestling show there. So she wrestled, and she won yet another championship. And I don't remember the name of the championship, but it's amusing to me, the idea that she is going around and having her people go around, probably going on Google Maps and just pointing out these little villages and little towns in these obscure places all over the world that she could go visit to take their titles. Like, I just saw Fantastic Four yesterday. Good movie, by the way. I enjoyed it. And it reminds me, it's like she's like Galactus. Mercedes is like Galactus, where she's going around and, you know, consuming different planets and kind of taking them for her own. She really is. She's the Galactus of AEW. That's what's going on here. So I don't know where to next. I don't know. I mean, do they have independent wrestling in Antarctica? Is there some place maybe there? You know, she can bundle up and I have no idea. I'm sure she's not done. I think she wants to get to double digits. I think she wants 10 titles. We'll see. But she walks out here and it's ridiculous because she has the belts wedged in her waistband because she can't possibly carry all of them. So she's got the TBS title around her waist. All these other titles are basically hanging off of her. She needs assistance from a production assistant or whoever it is at ringside to help her into the ring. So she, and this is her first appearance on TV, by the way, since she lost to Toni Storm in Texas last month. She gets into the ring, and now she's handing off her belts one at a time, feeding them to Aubrey Edwards. But she's got the one title on her that matters in this situation, which is the TBS title, as she confronts Alex Windsor, who is going to be part of a four-way match now at Forbidden Door for the championship. So as Toni Storm gets into the ring to get ready to join Alex Windsor in case shit goes down, she doesn't notice that Athena has climbed up to the top, and she comes flying in with an O-face, and she drops Toni Storm. Mercedes Moné then hits Alex Windsor with a backstabber when Windsor turns around to see what's going on, so now she's down on the mat, and we have Mercedes, and we have Athena. And they come face-to-face in the middle of the ring. They don't touch. They don't embrace. They don't shake hands, but they don't touch. It's almost like there's this understood, unsaid truce between them. And Athena ends up leaving the ring. So Windsor getting a championship match in London seemed like the obvious outcome here. I mean, obviously her connection to London. So her being the AEW representative in that match, seemed pretty predictable coming into this. I will say, though, she and Aminata in this match, they looked like they were really laying those shots in on each other, which was good. You know, it looked good. Bret Hart may not like that very much. He's probably not a fan of this match, but I thought that was good. And so Windsor earns a spot in the four-way. There's two more spots yet to be filled. One spot will be filled by a CMLL talent. One spot will be filled by a Stardom talent, and that is going to be the Mercedes match at Forbidden Door, and the TBS title will be on the line. So if they wanted to take that championship off of her in that match, she wouldn't have to take the losing fall. I don't know. It doesn't feel to me like this is going to be a title change. I think that it would be a waste, honestly. She's had that title for over a year. She's had it for so long that I feel like when she loses it, it should be decisively one-on-one to somebody on the AEW roster. Not a Stardom talent, not a CMLL talent. I know MJF has a CMLL belt. I don't give a shit. When she loses the TBS title, it needs to be to someone in that division on that roster, and it should be one-on-one. So I'm pulling for her to win at Forbidden Door, because after all this time, if she just drops it in a fucking four-way, especially to somebody who may not even be on the roster, like, what a fucking waste that would be. I don't know who the other two people are going to be. It could be a great match, but Mercedes should absolutely not be losing that match. And we'll see if we get a tag team match between now and then on TV. This felt like it was setting up Toni Storm and Alex Windsor against Mercedes and Athena. So we'll see if that actually happens. Renee was backstage earlier today with the Young Bucks and was asking them if they have been paying attention to the success that Brodito, that of course is Bandido and Brody King, the success that they've had of late. Nick Jackson said that there's some serious disrespect going on here. Matt grabbed Charlie, the stagehand, who was nearby, and yelled at him for their lackluster entrance last week, handed him some notes, said, "Give these to Justin Roberts. Make sure that we get the right introduction this week. The respectful introduction this week." So Renee, I keep mentioning her. I said she was all over the place tonight. You go to commercial, they come back, it's right back to Renee. But she was in the ring this time to introduce the brand new TNT champion at long last, Kyle Fletcher. He won the championship on Collision last week from Dustin Rhodes. He comes out with not all the members of the Callis family. Okada wasn't there. I didn't see Takeshita. But whatever members there were, the Callis family is in the ring. And there is clearly a painting of some kind. Either a giant poster on a poster board or a painting or something. We can't see what it is. It's covered by a tarp, but that is sitting in the middle of the ring. So Renee said that it was a hard-fought, gruesome battle, a very bloody battle, against Dustin Rhodes on Collision. She gets cut off by Don Callis, who said, "Why is he building the largest faction in all of wrestling? Power." Says, "If you want power in this business, you cast your eyes on the gold. And when you have gold, you control destiny." Callis brings up Kazuchika Okada's three titles, and now Fletcher's TNT title. Much like Okada put Kenny Omega on the shelf, Fletcher might have ended Dustin Rhodes' career entirely. Fletcher said that Dustin got exactly what he deserved for stealing his moment at All In. He said a 60-year-old man doesn't deserve to be in the ring with the protostar, and it's not the only favorite that he has put on the shelf. Who knows if we'll see Adam Cole ever again? So Fletcher said he fulfilled his destiny by winning the TNT title, but now it's about legacy. And Callis said that he knows Fletcher will be the greatest TNT champion of all time, and he has spent the last 2 days slaving away. He can still feel the paint under his fingers as if he painted this thing all by himself. Fletcher wants to see this painting, so it's time to unveil what's underneath the tarp. And they pull the tarp off, and it is a painting of Kyle Fletcher and Don Callis, and both of them are ridiculously ripped in this painting. Basically, they did the same thing with Callis and Kenny Omega a few years ago. Actually, they might have done it with somebody else too, and I don't remember who that would have been, but they did it with him and Omega. Maybe it was Jericho. So now he's got one here with Kyle Fletcher. I wonder where all these paintings go. I wonder if Callis gets to take them home and put them on his wall at home. I don't know. But Kyle Fletcher is very impressed, and he says that it's the greatest gift he's ever received. Must have been a really sad life and a sad childhood for Kyle Fletcher. But it's the greatest gift he's ever received. He knows that he owes all of his success to Don Callis. Fletcher's very first defense of the TNT title will be this Saturday on Collision, as Fletcher will be the TNT champion, he says, for a very, 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 very long time. So if you didn't see the match, Dustin Rhodes and Kyle Fletcher had a very bloody, hardcore match on Collision last week. I know Dave Meltzer made a whole big deal about it. He gave it 5 stars. I mean, of course he did. So, but as far as those types of matches go, it was a very violent, bloody match. At one point, Dustin had a screwdriver that visually was sticking out of his knee. And he had to be carried out, and they were teasing that he was injured. And then Dustin made the announcement on social media that he had some MRIs done, and his doctors told him that he was going to need some very invasive major surgery. And he's blaming it on Kyle Fletcher. Basically, they shot that angle to cover for the fact that he needs double knee replacement surgery, which is a big deal for someone who is still an active performer and not a young active performer. He said he's having a double knee replacement, but he's not done yet. He's going to be back. He's 56 years old, getting a double knee replacement. I don't know if he's going to be back. That seems very ambitious. It's good to have goals. I can understand him wanting to come back because he still feels young at heart. And Dustin is still able to go out there and perform. But you know what? If this was it for him, I feel like he got to win the TNT championship. He got that great moment in Texas. So he got to say, okay, I'm a singles champion in AEW. Not only was he a singles champion, but he's got 2 tag team titles in Ring of Honor, right? The Trios titles, or 6-man, whatever they're called. and the ROH tag team titles with Sammy Guevara. As far as I know, I think he still has both those belts, and I would imagine those are going to have to be vacated now. I can't think of a better way to go out if you're Dustin Rhodes. And by the way, great timing on re-signing that new contract recently, that new six-year deal that he signed. He got that in right under the radar. But, I mean, the guy was draped in gold and just went out and had this, you know, fucking knockdown, drag-out fight and put over Kyle Fletcher. You know, again, I can't think of a better way to go out if that ends up being his last match. But he seems to be intent that it's not his last match. So hopefully everything will go well. That's a tough thing. I mean, there are wrestlers, Kurt Angle, I think, that have had both knees done at the same time. You know, one of them is tough enough, but to do both at the same time, that's going to be rough. That's going to be rough. But we'll see what happens as far as whether or not he makes it back. Don Callis's head scar is gnarly, says Matty Cakes. He paints it in. You could tell. He paints the scar to make it look brighter and worse than it is. It's actually kind of funny. There's no way he's walking around with a scar that looks like that in real life unless he's painting it in. Putting some makeup on it. I mean, it works for him. It seems to be, it makes it look like it's getting brighter and brighter every single week. Alicia Atoot. Holy shit. Someone other than Renee Paquette was in the back with Adam Copeland, who said that he didn't know how to take Christian Cage's non-apology last week because it's clear that Christian has learned nothing. Cope said that he has his hands full with Nick, Kip, and Shayna, while Cope has his hands full with FTR and Stokely Hathaway. So he got a hold of Tony Khan, and next week it's going to be, for the first time ever, one-on-one. It's going to be Copeland against Stokely Hathaway. Cope said that it'll be up to FTR if they want to break their order of protection that they placed upon him because they don't want Cope coming near them. So it's up to them. You could break the restraining order and come after me if you want to. Or you could stand in the back and watch your boy over here get slaughtered. He goes, the choice is yours. So if FTR interferes here, their restraining order is null and void. And then Copeland can come after them. Now in the back later, Alicia spoke to FTR and Stokely Hathaway. And they said they see right through Adam. They know that, you know, he's playing games here. They know what he's doing. But remember, they got that order of protection against him for his protection, so that his daughters could grow up with their father. Don't make them do this. Stokely then was very upset. He said, look at me. I'm not a professional wrestler. I'm also injured. He still has the crutch under his arm. He goes, I'm short, I'm bald, I can't get any hoes. I've been fighting my entire life. If you want a fighter, I can fight. I may not be a wrestler, he says, but I'm a fighter. But that's what he said. He's short, he's bald, he can't get any hoes, but he's been brawling all of his life. And FTR had to calm him down. He said that he's going to have a smile on his face when Cope has to go home and look at his wife, who's got the head of a micro brawler, and his future juvenile delinquent kids, and tell them that he got pinned by Stokely Hathaway. Stokely is great. What's going on, Jake? We got Jake, the original tribal chief, is with us in the chat. Dustin has had more gold, says Joey, than he had as gold dust. Yeah, I mean, the last few months, the guy's walking around. He's the closest thing to a male version of Mercedes. He's like the male belt collector lately in this company. I mean, seriously, if you wanted to go out on a high note, it doesn't get any higher than that. So then we had the high point. Talk about highs. High point of the show, the Young Bucks against Brodito. That's Brody King and the Ring of Honor World Champion Bandido. This is the semifinals of the Tag Team Eliminator Tournament. The winners go on to the finals to wrestle FTR. The winners of that match challenge the Hurt Syndicate at Forbidden Door. So during the Young Bucks entrance, the set malfunctioned. Basically, there was a screen that was supposed to rise up it rose up only a few inches and then it got stuck. So they're trying to like force it up. It's not going up. So they were forced to crawl underneath the screen to make their way out onto the stage. And remember the note earlier that they handed off to the production assistant, the stagehand, to give to Justin Roberts for him to read? Well, Justin did read it, but he ended up reading it verbatim, exactly as it was written. So like instructions and all. And it was just a list of complaints that they had. So then they do their Young Bucks pose. They're waiting for the pyro to go off. There's no pyro initially. And then there's like two very pathetic little bursts of pyro that shoot off. Two little pyro streams. Then they also had the lower third on the screen, the little Chiron on the bottom of the screen. And it's listed their names as Max and Jeremy Buck. Now, of course, that's going back a ways because they were Max and Jeremy Buck in TNA. That was great. When I saw the Max and Jeremy nameplate on the bottom of the screen, I said, okay, that's fucking funny. That was going back to the Generation Me days of TNA. So again, I've been very entertained by these jobber entrances that they've been getting over the last few weeks. Bandido took down Matt and Nick with a tornillo. Brody King tagged in, took out both Bucks with a double clothesline. Bandido then used Brody's assistance to scale the ropes and land a moonsault onto both Bucks on the floor. The Bucks took control, though. After a break, Nick flew in with a springboard Hurricane Rana on Brody before sending Bandido crashing outside. Risky business on Brody King, who kicked out. Nick continued to keep the big man down in the corner. We got an assisted sliced bread into a running boot that got a near fall. Matt wanted more bang for your buck. Collapsed, though, under the weight of Brody King, with him on his back. King fired off a forearm, flattened Nick in midair. Bandido made the tag. Nick hit his slingshot facebuster on Bandido and then the comeback moonsault on the floor to Brody King as the Bucks followed up with the assisted swanton only for two. King got low-bridged after making the save. Matt hit a blockbuster off the apron. Nick connected on an escalera onto Bandido. That took us into a second commercial break. So the Bucks couldn't decide on what to call the EVP trigger. It's not the EVP trigger anymore. So they're arguing about this in the middle of the match. That caused enough of a delay to allow Bandido to dodge it, make the hot tag to Brody. There was this great spot, this great double team spot, where Brody King was by the ropes. The Bucks are outside, and Bandido is going to obviously do some kind of a dive. So he runs, he hits the ropes, and he comes off. And basically, King helped launch him a little bit higher into the air. And, I mean, really, it was a very basic dive, but it looked great because Bandido got this hang time. It's almost like he was suspended in midair for, like, a good couple of seconds there before he actually landed on the Bucks. And everybody popped, and it got over great. It looked great. Bandido is awesome. I mean, I know I've said it before. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure it out, but Bandido is fucking great. Even before he got, you know, injured with the wrist, and now we're going back like a year and a half, it sucked that he got hurt because even then he was building momentum and he hadn't even been on TV for that long. Like, people knew who he was, but he was still relatively new to the company. But he gets over it. Doesn't matter what crowd he's in front of. He's just a fun performer to watch, and obviously he's a tremendous athlete, and the stuff he does in there is unbelievable. But it's cool to see him getting that exposure and getting over in front of whatever crowd he might be in. It's been consistent with him from day one. So I'm glad he was able to make it back from the injury and basically pick up where he left off. So that was a great spot. We had Matt. He was into the ring with a facebuster on Bandido, but he got crotched in the corner by Brody, who hit a huge superplex. Brodido tried their double-team catapult monkey flip that they do. Bandido, though, crashed and burned hard on the mat. TK Driver connected by the Bucks. King broke up the count. So Matt scaled the ropes. He spiked Bandido with a DDT on the apron. Immediately went and tried to do the exact same thing on the apron to Brody King, but he was able to catch him in midair. He powered him up into a Death Valley driver on the apron. Nick was there, though, to save his brother with the tornado DDT off the apron to the floor to Brody King. Nick and Bandito, they fought while both men stood on the barricade. We had like a little duel standing on top of the barricade here. And Nick hit a super kick. He charged. Bandito press slammed him up into the air and then dropped him down onto his brother, all while standing on the barricade. Back inside, Bandito hit the 21-plex to Matt, but Nick broke up the pin. King wiped out Nick with a tope. Bandito flattened Matt with an avalanche fall-away slam, only for a two count. Senton from King. This time, Brodito was successful, landing the monkey flip 450 splash, and they got the pin. The highlight of the show was this match right here. This was an excellent match. A surprising outcome for some. I mean, not for me, but I could see where some people might be shocked by that outcome, figuring, oh, of course they're going to do the FTR Bucks rematch in the finals of the tournament. But it never made any sense to me. Like, to me, I would have had the Outrunners win in the opening round. I was surprised and disappointed when they had them beat the Outrunners again. When I say again, I mean the Outrunners have lost most of the big matches they've been in recently, including two matches with FTR. So that was a little surprising to me. Them not going to the finals to do two heel teams against each other should not have really been a surprise to anybody. And again, they're doing their whole down on their luck thing. They lost the EVP titles. They're getting jobber entrances. Everyone's making fun of them. Like, it's okay for the Bucks to lose. It kind of fits the gimmick that they're doing right now. Nothing is going right for these two. Brodito is a great team. I mean, that name is, I mean, whatever. I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense, but it's this team that came out of nowhere and they work great together and they're already super over. But what I love about it is now we get not only a great match in the finals where we get them against FTR, but again, you could argue for either one of those teams to go on to wrestle the Hurt Syndicate in London. FTR would seem to make the most sense. I would imagine it's going to be them going to the pay-per-view. But it could very easily be Brody King and Bandito. Why not? If you want a solid babyface team to go in there against the Hurt Syndicate, there you go. You got one right there. FTR probably is going to be the choice at the end of all this. They're probably going to get that shot. But this is great. Yeah, I think this is a great final match that they've set up now. It's the correct outcome. But whoever it is that goes in there against the Hurt Syndicate, either way, the Hurt Syndicate should lose those titles at Forbidden Door. Had those titles for a very long time, and I think the time has come. Well, whether or not you want MJF to get involved in that and kind of cost them the match because there's been issues, he was kicked out. He's not even part of the Hurt Syndicate anymore. You could do that. I mean, that would be their way of sort of protecting Lashley and Benjamin if they didn't want them to just get beat clean. You could certainly do that, but I am of the opinion that the time has come and they should drop those belts at Forbidden Door. Now, Renee was backstage with the Hurt Syndicate. MVP extends a congratulations to Brodito for winning the match, and they will be more than happy to hurt them or FTR at Forbidden Door. It doesn't matter. MJF walks in, and Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin immediately turn and leave. So now it's just MVP and MJF. And MJF says, look, you and me have known each other since I was 18 years old. Says, so we don't need Shelton and Bob. We can win the AEW World Championship together. MVP said, look, you don't get it, man. You just don't understand. Like, they hurt people. But ever since you've joined the group, it's been all about me, 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 me. And your ego. He goes, and that's coming from me. He gave Max a thumbs down. MVP said that out of respect, they'll leave him healthy enough to go off and challenge for the world title. He says MJF is like a little brother to him, which is why he hopes MJF loses in his title match when he gets it. Because if he wins, he was very clear here in no uncertain terms that if you go on to win that championship, Bobby Lashley is coming after you. And it's not going to end well for you. Now, Let me dive into this report from yesterday. Fightful dropped a report, got a lot of play today, regarding MVP and the Hurt Syndicate. And it's been reported that MVP has rubbed a lot of people the wrong way backstage in AEW. It says, this sentiment has been expressed by a number of talents on the roster. Supposedly, MJF has made it known that he does not like Speedball Mike Bailey. I mean, you talk about a random news item that came from out of nowhere. Like, okay. He doesn't like Speedball Mike Bailey. Doesn't say why he doesn't like Speedball. He just doesn't like him. And allegedly did not want Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin losing to Jet Speed when they had their tag team title match. It's not clear why MVP dislikes Bailey or if the Hurt Syndicate was ever actually planned to lose to Jet Speed. The report also states that MVP turned down pitches for the Hurt Syndicate to lose to FTR at All In and at Forbidden Door. MVP reportedly suggested they would rather lose to the Gates of Agony, the Outrunners, or Private Party. All teams that they have, I believe, wrestled and beaten in the past. I don't know about the Gates of Agony. Maybe they didn't wrestle them, but I know they've wrestled the other teams. There is said to be frustration within the AEW locker room that the faction beats everybody up and then goes and high-fives the fans and does cool moves when they're supposed to be heels. It was also noted that the storyline with MJF was originally supposed to go longer, although there is no reported heat between MJF and the Hurt Syndicate. So that was the report that came out last night. Now, I don't know. I don't know whether or not MVP has turned down pitches for the Hurt Syndicate to lose the tag team titles. I don't know, frankly, why he would be in a position to tell Tony Khan what teams the Hurt Syndicate should or should not be losing to. Because now you're getting into a creative control issue, right? Where it may not be written into an actual written contract, but where you have people who feel like, you know what, the old Hogan thing, you know, that don't work for me, brother. And, you know, you start getting into that, and that's where you get yourself into trouble. So that doesn't even make a whole lot of sense to me. Tony Khan is the boss. If Tony Khan wanted the Hurt Syndicate to lose to FTR, then the Hurt Syndicate is losing to FTR. And if Tony Khan wanted the Hurt Syndicate to drop the tag team titles to the Outrunners, then guess what? They're losing to the Outrunners. So I'm not quite sure, you know, what the issue is here or why MVP would even be in that position in the first place. Now, as far as the Mike Bailey stuff is concerned, I did notice during the show tonight, there was something that he posted on his social media, a fun little skit, like a little 20 or 30 second video on social media where the Hurt Syndicate is walking along backstage and they run into Speedball in the hallway. Who's filming? And MVP just walks up to him and goes, fuck you, Speedball. And Speedball goes, fuck you too, MVP. And then there was some other dialogue and then it was over. So obviously they're just playing, having fun with the report and playing off of it. That does not necessarily mean the report is inaccurate. It just means that it could be accurate and it's not all that serious and they're just having some fun with it to try to diffuse the situation. But I don't know if MVP dislikes Mike Bailey or not. Frankly, I don't really give a shit. And as long as it doesn't interfere with their ability to work together and cause any problems in that respect, I don't really see what the big deal is. If MVP for some reason doesn't like Mike Bailey, okay, so what? There's a lot of people that I don't like. But if I don't have to work with them, or I feel like I could get along with them if I had to, then I don't see what the issue is here. There's probably a lot of people in that locker room that don't like each other. There's probably people in every wrestling locker room that don't like each other or have people on the roster that they don't care for. As long as they're not, you know, going at it tooth and nail, as long as it's not causing drama in the locker room and problems, who gives a shit? I read that report and was more taken aback by the whole idea that MVP would be vetoing, you know, ideas for who would be the Hurt Syndicate. See, that shit can't stand. That should not be happening. Hopefully it isn't happening. Now, as far as the idea that, well, he doesn't want them to lose the titles to, I guess, an established team like FTR, but would prefer that if they were going to drop the belts, they drop them to the Outrunners, right? Sure, that would be great. Look, I was all for the Outrunners winning the tournament and going to London. Like, I'd be okay with that. And really, you know, pushing those guys. Well, like it said, the Gates of Agony. The Gates of Agony are fucking heels right now with Ricochet, right? And they got bounced out of the opening round of the tournament. The Gates of Agony winning the tournament and going to Forbidden Door to wrestle the Hurt Syndicate would be stupid. Doesn't make any sense. Private Party, I'm like, where the fuck did that come from? Private Party was destroyed by these men. They have not been seen since. To the point where there's reports now of there being interest from NXT. They may end up in NXT. Which is probably where they should be. You've already killed them. There's no coming back from that. There was never any serious push for Private Party. They put the belts on them last year. The Bucks lost the belts to them on the five-year anniversary show. And what the hell did Private Party do after that? They were made to look like absolute geeks. And then they were beaten decisively, and I don't think they have been seen since. So the idea that we're going to revive Private Party and have them win the titles, no, you're not. There's 0% chance of that happening. It's over. It's done. They've been destroyed. So what are we looking at? We're looking at FTR. We're looking at FTR, maybe even Brodito. The Outrunners got bounced out of the opening round of this tournament, but I suppose you could always still build a story around them, you know, clawing their way back. There's not a lot of great options right now, to be honest with you. And I just look ahead to like All Out. And if the plan is to reunite Copeland and Christian on that show and they wrestle FTR, I still feel like you could have the tag team titles on the line in that match. Because I'm sure Tony Khan would love to get those tag team titles one time on Cope and Christian. It doesn't have to be a title match, but it would make it a bigger match if the titles were on the line. The idea that, man, they could recapture tag team gold for the first time in I don't even know how many years it's been since Copeland and Christian were tag team champions together. To do that, you would have to get the belts on FTR. That's why FTR makes sense right now. So I could appreciate the idea, well, we want to put over a younger team and not one of the established, you know, former champion veteran teams. But I see some of the names on that list and they just don't make any sense to me. Even Jet Speed would have made more sense. And they killed them off too. I don't have any interest in going back to Jet Speed again. Who else is there? Other than the teams I just mentioned, who else is there? The Bucks? I mean, Swerve. Yeah, the Ospreay injury is too bad because I think Swerve and Ospreay could have been an option there. You could have kept that going for a little while longer. But with Ospreay's injury, that just wasn't possible, so they had to move on. You know, so Swerve is working with Okada, so that's off the table. But yeah, this whole idea, if there is any truth to it, of MVP vetoing ideas for who they should lose to, again, that's not his job. Right? To my knowledge and everyone else's knowledge, he wasn't given that power. Maybe he was. And if he was, that's pretty fucking stupid on Tony Khan's part. But assuming that's not the case, then he's in no position to be vetoing and approving anything. Tony Khan is the guy who's running the show. What he says goes. Period. End of story. That's where the drama ends. All this other stuff is just nonsense. We got a video package hyping up the Unified Championship match at Forbidden Door between Kazuchika Okada and Swerve Strickland. Renee, this time she was in the aisle. They've moved her around the entire building. At one point, she was actually in the parking lot when Mercedes Moné arrived. I didn't mention that. So when Mercedes arrived, she was in the parking lot. So she's gone from the parking lot to the back. Now she's in the aisle. She introduces Swerve and Prince Nana. They come out. Swerve said that he had to put down his good friend Will Ospreay last year at Forbidden Door. And if he could do that to his friend, what does Okada think he could do to him? He said people say Okada is a legend, right? He's a legend of Japanese wrestling. But no one will ever be able to replicate Swerve Strickland. And he explained that he lost some of the biggest matches of his career in London. and he would use the opportunity against Okada to cement his legacy and knock the chip off his shoulder. He said that he would claim the Unified Championship and make his claim to being the greatest of all time. This was good. This was a good promo here. Short and simple. Fans enjoyed it. We had no Okada on the show. The build so far has been, you know, pretty basic. We still have a few weeks left. I'm not sure what they're going to do. I think the match itself should be very good. But as a promo, I thought this was very good. Now, they went backstage to Alicia to. She asked Mark Briscoe about the main event coming up. He said that he couldn't wait to get his hands on MJF and give him the beating he deserves. Alicia then said that he has won 3 consecutive Dynamite main events, and winning tonight could mean a shot potentially at the AEW World Championship. And wouldn't you know, at that exact moment, we had the AEW World Champion walk in. So his first and only appearance so far of the night, Hangman Adam Page walks in, and he's looking at Mark, and he says, "We've known each other a long time. PWX, ROH, New Japan, AEW. He said that while he's always admired the Briscoes, it's what Mark has done over the past few years that's made that respect even stronger for him. And he said that he hopes if Briscoe wins, that means he gets a world title shot. And he wishes him luck, and he shakes his hand." And that set up what we would be getting momentarily here in the main event. Renee was back. Yeah, I'm going to record myself saying this, so it'll be a lot easier for me to have a button that I could push where I just say, "Renee was backstage." Like one of those fucking dolls where you pull the thing, the string in the back. Renee was backstage with Queen Aminata, who was disappointed that she didn't win the 4-way match tonight. She said that she felt like she could have been Mercedes Moné if she had the opportunity, or beaten Mercedes Moné. Or she could be Mercedes Moné if she just had the opportunity to do so. Willow Nightingale walked up and said that she was sorry she didn't win earlier, but she gave a great performance. She said that she would get her revenge on Saturday when the two of them face the Triangle of Madness. That's Tekla and her new crew. Chris Statlander walked up, and she was acting very insincere, and pretending to be all about women supporting women. Willow told her off for being a fraud, and Statlander stormed off. I don't know when this frenemies thing with her and Willow is going to play itself out and when it's going to end and resolve itself, but it just feels like it's been dragging on for a while now. And hopefully we are rapidly approaching whatever the payoff to this is going to be. Now, there's been a lot of chatter about women's tag team titles. Tony Khan has already confirmed the physical belts have been made, right? They're probably sitting in his vault. He's got one of those giant vaults at home with the thing, you know, you put the combination this way, you put the combination that way, it opens up, and he's got probably fucking belts galore sitting in a vault somewhere. But he delayed plans because there's been so many injuries in the women's division. Like, even just coming out of the casino gauntlet in Texas, there were a bunch of women who ended up hurt. Mina Shirakawa, she broke her hand. Shuri from Stardom, who was in that match, ended up in having elbow surgery, I think, later that week. Thunder Rosa got hurt, so she's going to be taking some time off. Jamie Hayter is still gone. No idea what the update is on her. Last time we saw her, she was attacked by Tekla when Tekla made her debut, but I still go back to the match with Mercedes in the Owen when she got spiked on her head near the end of that match, and she hasn't done anything since. Harley Cameron is still out. There might be one or two other people I'm not thinking of. So he really doesn't want to put together another tournament, he said, with half the roster that he would normally have access to. But we're going to get women's tag team titles, and when we do, could we see Chris Statlander and Willow, you know, end up as the first ever women's tag team champions in AEW? I think we can. I think they would probably be at the top of the list right now of likeliest, you know, teams to walk away with those titles. So they're coming. We just don't know when. I mean, they could take their time. No rush. No rush. The main event was MJF. Also, no run, no rush on this show. He'll be on Collision. The main event of this show was MJF one-on-one with Mark Briscoe. And as Renee pointed out earlier in the show, this was the fourth straight week that Mark Briscoe has been in the main event of this show. He was on the winning side of a trios match a few weeks ago over the Death Riders. He got a win over Claudio. He got a win over Ricochet last week. And now here we are, him against MJF. The match very early in spilled out into the crowd. They brawled around, made their way back to ringside. Briscoe hit a neck beard. Sitting in the front row. He hit a neck breaker on the floor. A little slip of the tongue there. And then he set up a table outside the ring. Briscoe set up for a froggy bow. MJF, though, got to his feet, pulled the referee into the line of fire to cause a diversion. And in the middle of all this, he poked Briscoe in the eye. Briscoe started to come back as the show returned from break. He took to the top rope. MJF, though, rolled to the floor. Briscoe jumped down to the apron. He delivered an elbow drop on the outside. Tossed MJF back into the ring, but he rolled right back out to the floor on the opposite side of the ring. Briscoe then dove out onto MJF and sent him into the barricade. He placed MJF onto the table that was set up at ringside, and he climbed up to the top rope. MJF then rolled off the table and back into the ring. He cut Briscoe off with a kick and then dropped him with an Alabama slam. MJF applied a Boston crab. Briscoe rolled him into an inside cradle, only for two. Briscoe came up with a bloody mouth at that point. He climbed to the top again, and MJF knocked him down. MJF set up for a tombstone. He's going to give this guy a tombstone pile driver from the middle rope. We've seen him do this a few times before. Briscoe escaped, sent MJF back down with an uppercut. Briscoe then delivered Froggy Bow. Made a late cover, though, so we only got two. So they ended up on the floor again. And again, Briscoe sets MJF up on the table. He took to the top rope. He launched himself. MJF, though, moved out of the way. And Mark Briscoe crashed and burned through the table. That table exploded upon impact. MJF rolled into the ring. He was more than happy to take the count-out win. Referee starts counting. Briscoe, he got up, but he fell down at 8, got back up though, got back into the ring just in time. MJF delivered a heat seeker, and he covered him, and the referee counted 3, despite the fact that Mark Briscoe got his foot on the bottom rope. Somehow he did not see this. So Briscoe pleaded his case to the referee, to no avail. MJF assaulted him after the match. He punched him in the face after putting on the Dynamite Diamond ring, which busted Briscoe open. So now he was bleeding, and it also brought out Hangman Adam Page. MJF and Page, they brawled. They had to be separated by officials. MJF escaped into the crowd. Hangman went to go check on Briscoe, and MJF returned to the scene to go run his mouth. So Hangman and MJF brawled into the crowd for a little bit. They came back to ringside. Hangman set up for a buckshot lariat. I thought they were going to cut the show off because the copyright was already up on screen. They were already almost 10 minutes past the hour. And so he's setting up for a buckshot, and MJF ducks out of the ring on the opposite side to avoid that. And that is how the show went off the air. But again, this show had a good like 10-minute or almost 10-minute overrun that really was not warranted. Like, this show tonight did not warrant a 10-minute overrun. It was not needed. The match itself was okay. It felt like a good chunk of it, though, was just Mark Briscoe climbing. He would climb to the top. MJF would roll away. He'd climb down, and he'd climb up again. So there was a lot of that here in this match. The finish, though, it leaves open the possibility of two things. Either we're going to get another match one-on-one between MJF and Briscoe, possibly with a stipulation. They could do it on TV in the next couple of weeks. And the winner of that match formally will become number one contender for the world title. And that could be the match against Hangman at Forbidden Door. The other option is that Mark Briscoe gets added to this match. We get Hangman and MJF, but Mark Briscoe gets added because he's really been getting quite the push over the last few weeks. Maybe they want him in that match. Maybe they want him in. He's earned the right to have a spot in a pay-per-view title match main event. and we get a triple threat. That match doesn't really appeal to me, for being honest. I'd rather it be one-on-one. The match should be Hangman and MJF, not Hangman and Mark Briscoe. So I hope that that's the scenario that, you know, plays itself out. If, in fact, they're going to do that match, I mean, obviously Hangman has to be on that show. If he's going to be on the show, he should be defending his championship. You know, the match against MJF is the one that makes the most sense. So on the whole, I thought it was a solid show. You know, they kept the Death Rider stuff to a minimum, which is what I've been hoping for coming out of Forbidden Door. So it was limited to the opening segment. They're doing the stuff with Moxley and Darby. They took a big step tonight towards making it official for Forbidden Door. We got that great tag team tournament match with the Young Bucks. The women's four-way, it left something to be desired, but it set up one challenger, at least for Mercedes at Forbidden Door. Kyle Fletcher had his first promo as the TNT champion, which was very pedestrian stuff. But I'm glad they finally put the title on him. And then the main event angle that I just talked about. That was Dynamite tonight. Now, Collision is back to its normal Saturday slot this week. They've got Kyle Fletcher. He mentioned he's going to be defending the TNT championship for the first time. He will be defending that TNT championship against Tomohiro Ishii. Not a Forbidden Door. We're doing it on Collision. See, that's part of the problem with Forbidden Door, by the way. I feel like we get Forbidden Door on these shows almost weekly. Forbidden Door, I mean, it might still sell tickets. I get why he's doing it, but let's be honest. The bloom is off the rose. The bloom has been off the rose. But we get matches like that almost weekly on these shows with talent from other promotions. So unless you save like these super big interpromotional matches that people really want to see on that show, like what is even the point of it anymore? You know what I mean? Like the weekly television, like AEW in general, has become the Forbidden Door. You don't really need that one show anymore. So the other matches on Collision, we have Willow, Queen Aminata, and Ty Mello against the Triangle of Madness, Tekla, Julia Hart, and Sky Blue. Hangman and Jet Speed. Hangman's wrestling on Collision. They're going to be taking on La Facción Ingobernable, so Rush, Dralístico, and the Beast Mortos. Dynamite next week only has two matches announced. What a lineup this is. We got Jon Moxley against Kevin Knight and Adam Copeland against Stokely Hathaway. So there you go. They did not say when the finals of the tag team tournament is going to be. That would be a big match to do next week. You know, FTR against Brodito. And I mean, that's a match that should be on Dynamite and not on Collision. So they might add that to the card next week. We'll see. But those are the lineups for the next couple of shows as we continue down the road to Forbidden Door on the 24th. You know, the end of this month, there's going to be a lot of international shows from both companies. So AEW, are they doing TV the week before overseas? I don't know. But August 24th is Forbidden Door. And I'm going to have to come up with a plan here because the last two weekends of August, there's an AEW pay-per-view from the UK that's probably going to start at, I would imagine, 1 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the afternoon East Coast time. Then the Sunday after that is Clash in Paris, which has a 2 o'clock Eastern start time. Obviously, I do my Sunday show. So that show for those 2 weeks is probably going to have to go up a day early. And then we'll figure out the rest of it. You know, with all this talk about VPNs and stuff, now would be a good time to grab one. Don't forget, WWE's got a bunch of European Raws and SmackDowns coming up in a few weeks. They got their first TV ever in Dublin. They're doing some shows. I don't know if it's the UK or where else they're going to be. France, obviously. So there's a lot of international flavor coming up here for the remainder of August. So get ready. Here's the Twitter poll. We're doing it a little differently now. How would you grade Dynamite? A, B, C, or D? There is no F because I'm only allowed four options on X. A, B, C, or D? 18% gave this show an A. 24% gave this show a B. 21% AC and 36% gave this show a D. So go vote at Solomonster. This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. You know, Jaws is the ultimate summer movie. One of the greatest movies ever made. It's the 50th anniversary this year, too, of its release. Imagine going scuba diving in those waters, right? Now imagine going scuba diving in a suit made out of meat. That's a good way to become shark food. That's what going online without ExpressVPN is like. Scuba diving in a meat suit. Doesn't sound like the smartest idea, does it? Every time you connect to a network that has no encryption, whether it's at a restaurant, at the airport, maybe at your hotel, you need to know that your personal data is not secure. Any hacker on that same network can gain access to and steal your sensitive information like passwords, bank logins, or credit card details. What a pain in the you-know-what that would be. Good luck changing all of that. And that's the least of your problems if they make purchases with any of your accounts. Your data is valuable. Hackers can make up to $1,000 per person selling your information on the dark web. ExpressVPN stops hackers from stealing your data by creating a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. ExpressVPN is also the best VPN because it's super secure. It would take a hacker with a supercomputer over a billion years to get past ExpressVPN's encryption. It's also easy to use with the tap of a button in the app, and it works across all of your devices, phones, laptops, tablets, and more. It also comes with Identity Defender, a new suite of tools to get your data removed from data brokers, alert you when your data appears on the dark web, and even insure you against data theft for up to $1 million. There's a reason ExpressVPN is ranked number one by top tech reviewers like CNET and The Verge. I use ExpressVPN whenever I'm on the road, like at the airport or the hotel, so I know it keeps me private. And that's important to me because I need my information to be uncompromised. It's just a headache that I do not need if my data falls into the wrong hands. It would be an absolute nightmare. Why risk it? Why risk it when there's an easy solution available to avoid all of that? I choose to be proactive, not reactive, and you should too. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/solomonster. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster to find out how you can get up to 4 extra months free. expressvpn.com/solomonster. Hey, Death Scythe, start with you. What would it be like to play Mario Kart with Vince McMahon? You don't have to wonder because Vince McMahon plays Mario Kart every time he gets behind the fucking wheel. Don Callis and Mother Wayne kayfabe marry each other and merge both families. Yeah, I don't think so. I think she could do better than Don Callis. Joseph Stewart, Raven posted today that they made an autobiography movie called, quote, The Raven Nevermore, about his life and will be released this month. I did see something about that. He says, was Raven's gimmick in ECW and WCW based off of Nirvana's Kurt Cobain? I believe there was some influence there, yes. I don't want to say it's based off of Kurt Cobain, but I believe that there is some influence there. Joseph also says, with another $9.99, how different would Deborah McMichael's career in WCW and wrestling have been if she was Raven's love interest in Raven's flock in WCW? That's a weird relationship there. I don't know how you put the two of them together. What a random question. I don't think that would have worked. I think that would have actually been very bad for her career. Bad career move. Raven's flock didn't really last very long. Joseph Stewart says, what is your favorite Nirvana song? I mean, every time DDP would come out, how can you not think of Smells Like Teen Spirit? It was such a ripoff. But it's a great song. I mean, it was popular for a reason. I mean, there are other songs, but I always go back to that one. Like, if I have trying to think of my playlist, any Nirvana songs. I think there's two of them, maybe three. That's one of them. So I'll go with that one. Deathscythe. What do you think of Gunther as the Terminator if it got a remake? Gunther as the Terminator? That doesn't work. I don't see the vision there. I don't see the vision. I think that's Terminator being miscast. I see him as kind of like an evil crime syndicate boss. I think that works. Joseph Stewart, was Kane originally supposed to wear a cape? He did wear a cape. Initially, he wore a cape. There's pictures of it. It might have just been once, honestly, at Madison Square Garden. And they tried that out, and they ditched the cape, which was obviously the right move to make. Because it's just pretty silly to be walking around with a cape if you want people to take you seriously. So, it's like Undertaker, you know, his original name was Kane the Undertaker. They tried that out for a while, and that was on TV. He was called Kane the Undertaker. And they dropped that after a while, too. So, we got Joseph. Do you think Eddie Guerrero is Rey Mysterio's greatest rival of all time? Yeah, I would say so. Either that or tall cabinets. Joseph says, were you a fan of Raven's TNA run in the mid-2000s? No. I really wasn't paying much attention to that run, honestly. Have you seen the set photos of The Rock as Maui for the live-action Moana movie? I have not. I was aware that they were doing it, but I have not seen photos. And where would you rank The Rock as the greatest wrestler of all time? I mean, he's obviously in the upper mix, but I mean, he's not on my list, whatever that list looks like. He's not top five or anything. He's not on my Mount Rushmore. Where he falls on that list, I don't know. So, I mean, he's up there, but I can't tell you exactly where. It's not like top three or top five for me. We have got a gorilla. If Brodito doesn't win those belts, I riot and get weird looks from my neighbors. So good, it was worth reading a second time. A gorilla, thank you, man. Joseph says, buy or sell Raven versus Tommy Dreamer matches or Raven versus Sandman matches? Raven versus Tommy Dreamer. I'm going to buy on that. I'm going to sell on Raven against Sandman. Do you think Vampiro could have been a big star in wrestling? Vampiro actually was a big star in wrestling. Not so much in the domestic promotions here, but in Mexico, he was a huge star. Could he have been a bigger star here? He could have. A gorilla. Again, there he is. There is the man himself. We got Joseph. What are your thoughts on Stone Cold Steve Austin's ECW run? I think that it probably helped play a role in getting him the job that he got with WWF. I think it was pretty important. It was very brief, but I think it was pretty important. Kind of getting him on the radar again after he got fired from WCW. Bobbert Reviews, the $28 super chat. Bobbert, thank you. Come As You Are is another good one from Nirvana. Again, I wouldn't say my number one favorite, but just to kind of throw that one out there. What are your thoughts on Cactus Jack's run in ECW? What I remember of it, I enjoyed. I remember more about his run in WCW. I can rattle off more great matches he had there than I can in his ECW run. I wasn't paying as much attention to his ECW run. But in WCW, man, the match, the Beach Blast match with Sting is a classic. And the Halloween Havoc match with Vader. And actually, they had multiple matches that were quite good and vicious. But the Halloween Havoc 93 one in particular. So those are the ones that really stand out to me, like pre-WWE. Yep, Heart-Shaped Box. It's another good one. Before his match against Hollywood Hogan at Starrcade 1996, why did Roddy Piper go to jail and cut those promos? I think he went to Alcatraz, right? Were those the promos? Because he was fucking crazy, that's why. Piper was out of his mind. Why he did the things he did? I mean, you're asking the wrong person. And unfortunately, we can't ask him anymore. Nash DTV. Are you concerned at all about YouTube's new policy that makes users have to give IDs if the AI thinks that you're under 18? No. I mean, it's a policy that only applies to people who are under a certain age. So it might be a nuisance for some people, but I'm not worried. I mean, if they were making every user do that, that might be different. Death Scythe, I hope we get Samoa Joe against Kazuchika Okada at some point. Okada loves calling people bitch. And given their history, he used to be Joe's bitch. I'd like to see the match. Joseph says, were you a fan of WCW's Thunder theme song? I liked it. I didn't like it as much as the Nitro theme, but I liked it. Chris Williams, if you could change one wrestler's finisher, doesn't matter what company, who would you pick? And what finisher would you give them? I would give Bayley a new finisher because her finisher sucks. Get rid of the rose plant. What would I give her? I mean the belly to Bayley works fine, but maybe I'd give her a submission. Maybe like a chicken wing. Like a cross-faced chicken wing. But yeah, the rose plant's got to go. Duff's Vids. I got arrested by an attractive lady officer. She read me my rights, and when she said, anything you say can and will be held against you, I said, boobs. You forgot the second half of that. When you were tased and beaten with a billy club. Joseph Stewart, do you remember on Raw when Billy Gunn and Road Dogg pushed a dumpster that had Cactus Jack and Terry Funk in it off the stage? Remember it. I remember the night it happened. That was a huge angle. That was a big angle at the time. That was when the stages were more than 2 feet off the ground. And then they completely negated the entire angle at the end of the show when they came back from the hospital in their hospital gowns and their IV poles, rolling them down the ramp. And they just turned it into comedy. But they played it off as a very serious angle. I remember Sonny was, all the wrestlers on the side of the stage, and Sonny was in tears, crying, and everyone was mad at the Outlaws. That's when the Outlaws were first really starting to get themselves over, and then a few weeks later, they were in DX. Changed their entire career. Ed Swoggle says, Asuka has the chicken wing, basically. Ah, yeah. I guess she does. We don't want to steal Asuka's move now. What move could we give to Bayley? Let's come up with a move for Bayley. Something that's easy. Easy to apply or easy to hit. I don't know. What would be really impactful for her to do? Death Scythe. When someone says, don't be a pussy, just say, pussies are the toughest thing on the planet. They can take a pounding and birth another human being. That's true. That's very true. Some babies are born very big, too. You can have a 12-pounder. Try to visualize that. Glad that's not me. Joseph Stewart, have you seen the movie L.A. Confidential with Kim Basinger and Kurt Russell? Never did, no. I remember when it came out, but I just didn't have any interest in seeing it. I am a big Kurt Russell fan, though. I probably should see it. Kurt Russell is awesome, man. Big Trouble in Little China, The Thing. He did a movie back in 97. Wasn't a blockbuster or anything, but it's a favorite movie of mine called Breakdown. Snake Plissken, obviously, in the Escape from New York, Escape from L.A. movies. Yeah. And what was it, Tombstone or Wyatt Earp that he was in? Duff's Vids, what do you call a witch that lives on a beach? A sandwich. Sandwich. Joseph Stewart, do you think Bo Dallas will ever be a main eventer with the Uncle Howdy gimmick? No. No, he will not. I don't think Bo Dallas will ever be a main eventer, period. Duff's Vids, how do you say, what's up, dog? In Japanese, konnichiwa. Oh. I had to repeat that in my head just to get the punchline. If I have to do that, it's not the best. It's not the best. I like your last one. See, the sandwich, that's the one right there. We need more like that. All right, so he was in Tombstone. Kevin Costner was in Wyatt Earp. Yeah. My favorite Kurt Russell movie is still The Thing. Lost Dill. Just want to be clear. I know that more than Becky and Heyman knew about Seth's injury. My comment Monday night was a joke, just clarifying that I'm a mark, not an idiot. Love you, Solo. You don't have to worry about that. I already forgot what the comment was. It's already forgotten. That's right. RJ McCready from The Thing. There's always a lot of fan theories about that ending and what it means. Was one of them The Thing? Base Beer says bear hug for Bayley. Just do the belly to Bayley. Just stick with that. It worked for her in NXT. It could still work now. We don't really have to overthink this. Duff's Vids, what do you call an emo a cappella? Self harmony. Self-harmony. Oh, my God. The Juliet says the only real forbidden door at this point is WWE versus AEW matches. Pretty much, yeah. If you want the real forbidden door, it's the one that we're not going to get. That's about the only one left. Everyone's working with everyone, which is great. I think that's a great thing. But this idea of the forbidden door, I mean, it meant something when it started. What year was it? 2022? 3 years later. doesn't quite pack the same punch. Groovy Goose, in retrospect, how does Rock's 7-year absence from WWE compare to Punk's 7-year wrestling absence? Who has done better since their return? The Rock has. If you just look at it in terms of just pure business, The Rock has made far more money for the company anyway since coming back than Punk has. Just those first two WrestleMania matches that he did in 2012 and 2013, they made a fuck ton of money on that. That Rock Cena match at WrestleMania 28 was the biggest buy rate in WrestleMania history. You know, buy rates aren't really a thing anymore because they're not in the pay-per-view business anymore. But whatever they did prior to that, that easily topped it. You know, and then Rock coming in and doing the whole final boss thing and everything basically kind of saved WrestleMania last year because they pivoted and they went to that character and it all worked out. But just, I think in terms of the business and the money they've generated since Rock came back, because he came back such a big star, it's got to be Rock. Joseph Stewart, looking back now, do you think it was a good idea for Kane to unmask in 2003? Yeah, I mean, you could have kept it on him a little while longer, but at some point, it was inevitable to evolve the character and kind of add longevity to it. Because that initial period when he unmasked and they had the black towel and he was being let out in chains, like, that was a badass version of Kane. Like, it was working. So we can quibble about when they did it, but I think it was inevitable. The mask was going to have to come off, or he would have wanted the mask to come off. Isaac, did you see the trailer for Jordan Peele's Him? No, I haven't, but I've seen these commercials for this new movie, Weapons, which is out later this week. Well, tomorrow, I believe. And I'm thinking about it. It looks pretty interesting. It's funny that Julia Garner's in that movie, and then she was in the fucking Fantastic Four movie I just saw. She's the Silver Surfer in the movie. Joseph Stewart, was Raven WCW theme song based off of the Nirvana song Come As You Are? Yes. And DDP's was a playoff of Smells Like Teen Spirit. Jimmy Hart had a way of taking songs, other songs, and just changing a note or reversing the beat or doing some small little tweak and turning it into a wrestler theme song. And it was still better than the crap we get from Def Rebel these days. I would gladly take that WCW music from back in the early 90s and the mid-90s and the late 90s over a lot of the generic sounding crap that they come up with now. Even the generic sounding crap from then sounds better than the generic sounding crap from now. I don't know why that is, but even that sounded better. It breaks my heart when I listen to when Rick Rude comes out. I finally went back and caught up. They posted a video on the WWE Vault, I think 2 weeks ago, maybe a week and a half ago. It was 3 hours of Rick Rude matches. I go, I got to check this out. So it's taken me like 10 days to get through it. And it breaks my heart every time there's an old WWF match of his. I don't know who owns that music. The porn music that he used to come out to is the best way I could describe it. Like the stripper music that he used to come out to. But they dub over it with this god-awful like replacement version. I wish they would dub in the WCW song that he uses, because when they show the WCW matches, they use his WCW theme song, the Simply Ravishing song, which is on Spotify, and I was just listening to it the other day. It's a fucking great song. I don't know why they don't just kind of dub over the WWF theme with that one. The theme they use is fucking horrendous. It is so it ruins the entire entrance. It's so awful. Dude, it is so bad. If anybody from the vault is going to come across this or watching this, because I know they're always looking for suggestions, please, for the love of God, just take the WCW theme and dub that over the WWF theme, please. It would be so much better. Base Beer says a bear hug for Bailey. Joseph Stewart, do you know why Sting went back to the black and white face paint instead of keeping the red and black face paint of the Wolfpack when he came back to WCW television in March of 1999? I don't think he was part of the Wolfpack at that point, right? Black and white was the character that got over the most. Black and white is a classic look. I don't know that he was with the Wolfpack anymore at that point. Duff's Vids, why are balloons bad for the economy? They deflate. Snowdog says, simply ravishing is better than his stripper theme. I might agree with you on that. I liked his WWF theme. But his WCW theme probably is slightly superior. And Jeremy Rose. Lex Luger's WCW theme was Lex Luger's WCW theme was an undercover banger. Yeah, it's stock music. I've heard it in commercials many times over the years. So is the Hardy Boys music. It's a production song. It is great, though. I snatched it years ago. There was a site that had it. It's got a name. I think it's called... Let me see. Hold on a second. It has a name. I think it's called Slammer. I don't know what production catalog it's a part of now. There used to be one called Beatnik many years ago. But it's called Slammer, I do believe. And Duff's Vids. I just got hit hired at the Guillotine Factory. I'll be heading there tomorrow.
You suck.
Botched the super chat and got shouted off the stage. I think he means I just got hired at the Guillotine Factory. B-Money 04, $9.99. Hey, B-Money, what's going on, man? Did you see WWE's Vault Channel uploaded dark matches between Bret and Bulldog a month before the SummerSlam 92 match and a Jake Roberts, Rick Martel blindfold match a month before the WrestleMania 7 blindfold match? The Bret Bulldog match I watched the other day, I believe that was the match Bret talked about in his book, where when he came backstage, Vince McMahon went up to him and said, I hope your SummerSlam match is better than that. He wasn't very impressed with that match. And I think that was the last time Bret saw Bulldog before the match at Wembley. Because Bulldog went home for the summer. I think he might have had a knee injury. And according to Bret anyway, he spent, you know, the next whatever it was, 2 months smoking crack with Jim Neidhart. That's why when came time for the match at Wembley, he goes, Bret, I'm fooked. I forgot what I'm supposed to do. I'm fooked. The Martel Jake blindfold match, it's on my watch list. I have not watched it yet. I didn't know they did the like a dry run for the blindfold match. See, that's the kind of shit that I love from the vault. I will be watching that. That's on my to-do list. They also uploaded a dark match from 91 between Hogan and Flair that I believe was on their unreleased matches DVD they put out many years ago. I know I've seen it before somewhere. But it's still crazy to see them in the ring together during the entrances, and you've got Big Gold and the Winged Eagle like in the ring at the same time. Yeah, the vault is awesome. And there's a bunch of them too. I mean, there's the WWF vault, the WCW vault, there's an NXT vault, and I think that the page is basically like reserved for the ECW vault. They just haven't started uploading content there. There's almost certainly going to be an ECW vault at some point. But by far the one I spend the most time on is the WWF vault. So the goal was minimum 400 likes for Be the Booker, and I am happy to say that we have hit the goal. Did I ever see the Desert Storm match? Was that from Madison Square Garden? With Hogan and Slaughter? I believe I did. Groovy Goose, do you have a favorite Beatles song and or member? I don't. Sorry. The Beatles, the Monkees, all that stuff. I don't have a favorite. Who did the Yellow Submarine? Was that the Beatles? I'll go with that. I'll go with the Yellow Submarine. That's my favorite. Let's be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the Booker.
All right. You know, it's a good night on a Wednesday when we hit the goal so we could do some Be the Booker. All right, tag team Be the Booker. There's a lot of tag teams in here who are in the vault, in all that vault content. We got some classic teams in here. This isn't one of them, but they were a pretty good team. Team Hell No. By the way, that right there, I want you to take a look at Kane in that image. That right there is the shittiest version of Kane out of all the masked versions of Kane that he had. That outfit, that look, the fake wig. I don't know what the hell that shit is supposed to be on his gear. He looks like complete shit in that gear. I hate this version of Kane. I hate that mask. I hate this version of Kane. Absolutely hate it. That mask and wig doesn't even look like it fits his fucking head. Anyway, Team Hell No. Let's see who they're getting in the ring with. Oh, boy. Pat Patterson and Gerald Briscoe. The Stooges. Look, I was entertained by the Stooges, but, I mean, you know, putting them in the ring with Kane and Daniel Bryan, I think we could do better. I think we could do better. That's all I'm saying. Concessions Kane. I'll take Concessions Kane over that Kane. I'll take Corporate Kane over that Kane. Queen Zelina has graced us with her presence. This is not going well. Queen Zelina, well, you know what? We just took a turn. Queen Zelina against Io Sky. All right. I wasn't feeling too good about where this was going, but we were able to salvage that one. So now, at least, we can tip the scales in our favor. We have one yay, one nay. Main event time. Be the Booker has been repossessed. Game over. That's it, folks. That's it. The Repo Man has repossessed Be the Booker. And this game is over. Just like that. We get no main event. How do you like that? How do you like that? Oh, man. Fucking Repo Man just repossessed the entire thing. There's nothing I can do. At least we got to book two matches and we got an Io Sky match, right? That's got to count for something. One out of three is not good, but at least we got the one. Hold on. Duff's vids. I can't take my dog to the park anymore. He keeps getting bitten by ducks. Should have known since he's purebred. He's purebred. We got a regular Don Rickles over here. Base Beerus says, did you know that Prince wrote Manic Monday? Did he really? I did not know that. I like Manic Monday. Manic Monday is a good song. I did not know that Prince wrote that song. Joseph says, do you remember when Sting came back to WCW television in June of 2000 wearing a hockey mask after a few months when he had the match with Vampiro where he was set on fire? Did he really? I have no memory of this. I have tried to block out a lot about that period in WCW. So I knew about the match with Vampiro. I remember they were up on top of the Tron or something, and they did like a whole, I think Sting got pushed off. I don't remember him getting dressed up as Jason Voorhees, though. That I don't remember. Base Beerus says, Repo Man. Repo Man. Wait, hold on. Gotta do it the right way.
Repo Man.
You gotta do it. You gotta do it right. I'll take Repo Man's music over most of the music we have today. It was a vibe, you know? Maze the Great, that silver welding mask that Kane wore in 2012 was cool. Yeah, but it was like such a fleeting period of time. He didn't have it for that long. I remember that. He made a return, and he beat up John Cena. Right? That was the night, I think, that he debuted the welding mask. But the welding mask was gone after a very short period of time. Yusuf, yes. Yes, I don't have a timestamp for you, but I did talk about the MVP stuff. And Joseph Stewart says, were you a fan of Scott Steiner as the WCW champion? I didn't have anything against him as the champion. Again, I'm not a fan of that period. I don't like that period of WCW. I have zero interest in going back and watching matches from that period. You know, the WCW Vault Channel will have they might have one right now, like this 24-hour watch party. They have like this live feed. And I'll pop on there sometimes at night. It helps you fall asleep. And I love it when I pop into the watch party and there's stuff from like early 90s WCW. Like I love that stuff. And even some mid-90s. I'm talking like pre-NWO. But if there's something on from like 2000, I turn it off. Like I have no interest. I just can't bring myself to care. It ruined Kane as a monster, but I absolutely loved Team Hell No. I mean, they had their moments. It was a fun comedy team. I didn't like everything they did. Like, they had those therapy sessions with Dr. Oh, God, what the hell? Dr. Shelby? Was that what it was? Dr. Shelby? I mean, those were kind of amusing. Honestly, you know, I thought Head Cheese was more entertaining, to be honest with you. I love the dynamic between Al Snow and Steve Blackman. And, God, I mean, there was a SmackDown. And there were some segments that they did from an old age home. Al Snow told Blackman, I got us a gig at like a retirement home where they were going to go do stand-up comedy. And Blackman's like, you did what? And so they would cut in at this old age home. And I just remember this one old woman. Oh, my God. I'm just remembering this now. So, like, they're telling jokes. And all these old people are sitting around. And there's this one woman. And I don't know if they told her to do this or this was she was just doing it on her own. But she's like, you suck, black man. And it's like, my name's Blackman. And she kept saying it the wrong way. Like, without context, like, you hear her shouting this. And just Blackman's reaction to it. And I think the punchline was he ends up beating up one of the senior citizens. They don't show it. But, like, the next time they cut back to the home, they're leaving, and Snow is like, you can't beat up the patients, you can't hit them with your nunchucks, just like stupid silly shit like that. Those segments I remember. That was funny stuff. I'll take Head Cheese over Team Hell No. Yes, that's right. Joey's like, Head Cheese? Like, yes. Al Snow and Steve Blackman. Opposites attract. Blackman had that dry... He had no sense of humor, but he had that dry sense of humor, if you could call it that. And it just... The two of them played very well off of each other. Base Beer says, who would win? Who would you trade right now in WWE AEW, one for one? Bring MJF to WWE. And as far as AEW... Who would I send to AEW? I won't say that. I don't know. There's any number of people who would fit right in and do well in AEW. I don't know, but MJF and WWE is a no-brainer for sure. I guess from WWE. AJ. Ed Swoggle says AJ. AJ Styles, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not the AJ Styles of 10 years ago, but... Balor. Yeah, Styles, Balor. I probably Styles. I think that would be cool. We got Basico, Masuska. At one point in AEW, is the remedy too much with Tony? At one point in AEW, is the remedy too much with TK? I don't understand the question. I don't understand what you're asking. At one point in AEW, is the remedy too much with Tony Khan? Base Beer says, we read that one already. Joseph Stewart, what are your thoughts on Sid's run in ECW? Man, Sid was super over wherever he went. WWF, WCW, those appearances in ECW where he would just come out and powerbomb people. That was fun. That was fun. And he got monster reactions everywhere he went. Everywhere Sid went in his entire career, he always got over. Always. And Power Spying Games. Thoughts on the old Lunchtime Suicide series? Obviously, you would never see anything like that today. They were so stupid that I found them funny. Like, I was amused by them. But I can understand why they're sort of... You're not going to see those popping up on the vault. Let's put it that way. But I got a kick out of them. What was the line that Josh Matthews would always... that's not... Mr. White. That's not very wise, Mr. White. I don't even remember what... Oh, I think I know what it was. He got hurt. Right, that's what it was. Tim White had the injury. It forced him to retire from refereeing, and so he got very depressed, and they did these, like, WWE.com segments, and it just became like a running gag. Oh, completely in poor taste, but some of them were funny. Sid had one of the best looks in pro wrestling ever. Yeah, I mean, I said that when he passed away, I did a whole retrospective on Sid, and I said, if you were to build a pro wrestler from scratch, like, it would look like Sid. He just had, he had that look to him where he looked like a pro wrestler, but he looked like a monster that you would want to cheer for. And even when he was a heel, I feel like the crowds would react to him in such a way where, you know, it was hard for him to not get cheered, I feel like. He just had this cool factor about him, even with the curly hair, little Orphan Annie hair that he had there. If you built a pro wrestler in a laboratory, like, it would look like Sid. Yeah, the timing, I guess that... I forgot about the timing. The lunchtime suicide skits. I think that was a few months after Eddie Guerrero passed away. So, I mean, Eddie didn't die of suicide, but yeah, the timing probably, if the timing is what I think it is, the timing was probably not great. But yeah, I mean, they ended it and it was never spoken of again. Probably for good reason. And Base Beerus, Shark Boy and Curry Man in Be the Booker. Give me a shell, yeah. Yet neither of them are in Be the Booker. Neither of them are in Be the Booker. Be Money. If heel Doink would have lasted longer in WWF, who would you have wanted to see him feud with? I mean, I've mentioned Hogan before. An Undertaker or Hulk Hogan feud would have been interesting. I've mentioned Hogan. You could have absolutely, with the original evil heel Doink, you could have worked a Hogan Doink program at some point. Not, it would not have been a WrestleMania match. I know Matt Bourne said that he was supposed to wrestle Hogan in the main event, I think, of WrestleMania 9. He's full of shit. But that could have worked. Like, absolutely could have worked. You mentioned Undertaker. I think almost any top babyface with that evil Doink character, you could have made that work. That was the only version of the Doink character that ever mattered. Like, it was the best version. Once they turned him babyface, it just wasn't the same. And then Matt Bourne left, and then it really wasn't the same. Joseph says, why did Sid start to wear blue jeans when he wrestled? He was getting older. I think he wore blue jeans in ECW, but again, it was more like him just sort of crashing the party. It's not like he was showing up to do these long matches. So that made sense. And then in the later years, he was wearing the jeans. And I just think, you know, he was getting older and I don't know, maybe he just didn't like the way he looked in his old tights anymore, which can happen when you get older. I mean, I don't know that he ever commented on it, but I mean, that would be my guess. I don't see where that would have been more comfortable to wear, because I mean, unless they were just really comfortable, loose fitting jeans, I don't know that that would be more comfortable to wrestle in than tights. But I chalk that up to him getting older and physically, maybe he, cosmetically with his lower body, maybe it just wasn't looking the way that he wanted it to look. So he decided to wear jeans. Skipping leg day. Exactly. Maybe he was skipping leg day and he said, you know what? We're going to cover this up. And instead of getting tights, I'm just going to wear jeans. That way I can leave the ring and I can go right to the rental car and go to the hotel and not have to change. Base Beerus, buy or sell? T-Bar or Mitch from the Spirit Squad? I'm going to sell on both of them. Now, if I had to buy, I'd buy T-Bar. T-Bar had talent. They were just too stupid to see it. Then he broke his leg. Yes, because he skipped leg day. That's right. See, if he didn't skip leg day, maybe his leg would not have snapped in the way that it did. You thank John Laurinaitis for that. Laurinaitis is the one that, according to him, insisted that he do that stupid spot. So I saw a picture of John Laurinaitis entering Hulk Hogan's funeral this week. He reemerged from the shadows this week. Anyway, I am going to be back here live on this very channel for the SmackDown post show. We got a big show coming up on Friday night. John Cena will be on SmackDown. Cody Rhodes will be on SmackDown. It's all the fallout from SummerSlam. Who knows who else may show up on SmackDown? I won't. I'll be here. I'm confirming right now I will not be on SmackDown. But we'll talk about it when it goes off the air. And then this weekend is episode 924 of the Sound Off. Obviously, I will be talking about this whole WWE ESPN Peacock situation, more on Brock Lesnar, whatever other news may pop up between now and the end of the week, some AEW stuff. We'll get into all that. So that'll be coming up this weekend. So go and check that out. Until then, be well. Stay safe. Have yourselves a great night. Thank you for all the love tonight. Anyway, I'll see you guys Friday night. Until then, take care, guys.